Ghost Hunting in New England,
your favorite spooky podcast.
Hello and happy Wednesday. Welcome to this week's episode of Ghost Hunting in New England with your host, Amelia.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you over the sparkle of that giant thing on your hand.
And that is Beth. And yes, some people might have heard last week's episode where Tim Regan said there was joy and exciting news in my life. And yes, there was, because over the weekend, I got engaged.
Yay!
Amelia!
Yay, Paul!
Yay!
This is all very exciting.
Yes, it was very nice. We got engaged in Hingham and at World's End Park, and it was lovely. And then we went up to—
Did you see a ghost?
No. We went to Spooky
Salem. You could make it up and say that you saw our ghost.
Yeah. We got to give the people the truth. But we went to Salem afterwards and had some pizza, and it was a lot of fun.
Okay. Was it spooky pizza?
It was spooky pizza. I go to Flying Saucer Pizza Company, and all their pizzas are named after aliens.
Which one did you get?
We got the Martian and the Nick Fury.
Nice.
Delicious.
I would like to go get an alien-themed pizza as well.
They're so good. You gotta go.
When I was out in Niagara Falls, like 2 years ago now, we ate at the UFO restaurant. It was wild. It was like this big circle restaurant that you go in and like you sit, so you're in like a spaceship, and all of their food was alien themed, and Bobby got the ET fingers, or maybe he didn't get the ET fingers because he was freaked out that he would be thinking about eating fingers as he was eating chicken fingers. But anyway, it was fun, and so I have that t-shirt that I wear all the time. Yeah. Oh, the Flying Saucer restaurant, is that it?
Flying Saucer Pizza Company.
So yours was the Flying Saucer Pizza. I'm trying to remember what the name of my restaurant is. I think it might be the Flying...
I don't know. The point is, I got engaged.
way to bring it all the way back to what the point was.
And so it was really great. And Beth, you were the only person we FaceTimed. So you should feel very honored.
Excellent. I do feel honored.
And then we were sitting up on the hill, and I knew what was going on. I knew what was happening. And I had my nails done, and it was the whole thing. And we took a lot of photos because, as longtime listeners of the show will know, Amelia has a degree in photography. And
you have a what?
A degree in photography.
Oh, I thought you were a Reiki master.
I am that too, and I will get to that
later. Wow. You are all sorts of special.
I'm so special. And now I'm a fiance too. And Paul also likes photography, so we took some photos and we sent Beth some photos, and we went to put our photos on Facebook. And Paul's like, which one should we put, this and that? And Paul opens up Facebook and he goes, wait, they're already on here. And I go, what? And he goes, Ghost Hunting in New England has announced our engagement.
Yes, Ghost Hunting in New England was very, very excited about this announcement.
So thank you, Beth. And it was fun. And thank you so much to all of our listeners, everyone who reached out to me with the warm wishes. Thank you very, very much.
On behalf of all of our listeners, you're welcome.
Ba-da-da. So anyway, needless to say, it was kind of a busy week because that happened. I've spent the last few days in like a panic about like, oh my God, now I have this wedding and there's a pandemic and all this other stuff, and there is a pandemic, so I like can't focus on anything. And anyway, yada, yada, yada. Long story short, Beth has all the stories tonight.
Well, no, I would say that was a pretty good story. And
thank
that was
you.
Totally Amelia's story. Should we dive into stories?
Yeah, I tried to tell Paul, my fiance, that he should tell a ghost story, and that way it would like full circle.
Wait, what's his title again?
Fiance.
Your what?
My fiance.
Oh, your fiance.
My fiance.
I love that Seinfeld episode.
I do too.
And every time you say fiance, that's all I can think of.
The first like 2 days I kept calling him my boyfriend, and I'd be like, oh, I'm just kidding, my fiance. And then I'd start like laughing hysterically because And to like people who didn't really know me, and they, they didn't think it was funny as I did. Okay, so Beth, what are we talking about tonight?
All right, so our original idea for tonight's episode was to focus on the Long Trail in Vermont. Amelia thought that that was going to be a really fun thing to talk about and find all of these haunted stories around the Long Trail. And so I got kind of sidetracked and I ended up just looking at places to go hiking. And so we were sort of thinking about the Appalachian Trail in general. And so that's really where I focused a lot of my energy on. And I found a couple of really fun stories that I wanted to talk about. And we can just kind of kick them around a little bit. Sound good?
Sounds great.
My first story this week is from the Great Smoky Mountains in North Carolina, or possibly Tennessee. We're focusing closely on the Norton Creek Trail, an area populated mainly by ruins of old settlements and many, many cemeteries, somewhere in the neighborhood of like 200. Since the Great Smoky Mountains cover places in both North Carolina and Tennessee, I had a hard time getting any map location for the Norton Creek Trail. I did find another Norton Creek Trail that was in Idaho, but that wasn't the one that I wanted. Different maps showed it on different sides of that North Carolina-Tennessee state line, so let's just leave it at it's close to the Tennessee-North Carolina border. I also really wanted to know how long the trail is, but I wasn't able to find that. And in fact, when I like Google searched just information on Norton Creek Trail, all the results that came up were about Spearfinger. And this is really unusual because typically, and I don't know, Amelia, maybe you have the same thing happen, but when I search for information, I always have to include the location and then include a keyword like ghost, haunting, monster, something like that. But so it was interesting because it would seem that the only term associated with the Norton Creek Trail is this very spooky story. Do you find that you also have that when you're trying to look up things?
Yeah.
I mean, like when I looked up like Cohasset Town Hall, I mean, I really had to like dig in and use a lot of different keywords to try to pull out stuff about the ghost at Cohasset Town Hall. But yeah, this was just, even when I was trying to exclude stuff about Spearfinger, it wouldn't pull anything without it. And I looked at a lot of maps, like I spent a lot of time on this one. And yeah, I feel a little defeated because I couldn't get this information. So if anybody out there knows some factual information on the Norton Creek Trail, like exactly where it is and how long it is and all that kind of fun demographic information. Anyway, here goes our spooky tale. If you were a young Cherokee child, you would have stayed close to your village so Spearfinger couldn't get you. All children and adults in the Cherokee society knew about Spearfinger. A shapeshifter, Spearfinger was known to be able to take the shape of anything it wished, and most often appeared as a frail old woman. Her skin was made of stone. She would shuffle along, stooped over. She preyed on children, luring them in with her frailty, asking for their assistance, and lulling them to sleep when they weren't paying close attention. Then she would use her one finger that was made of sharpened bone, her spear finger, if you will, and painlessly removed the child's liver. Her entire diet was made of liver, but she preferred children's liver since it was fresh, young, and tender. After she removed and ate the liver, she would disappear, and the child or occasional adult would wake up and go back to the village with no idea what had just happened. They would go on living their life until they died unexpectedly of an unknown cause. As the tale goes, the villagers decided they had to get rid of Spearfinger before she destroyed everyone. So, naturally, they came up with the idea to dig a huge pit and fill the bottom with some gnarly spikes. This is very Roadrunner-esque. They covered the giant hole over with some leaves and forest floor coverings. Children and adults of the community went out hunting for Spearfinger to antagonize her into chasing them, and they led her toward the pit of spikes. She was getting more and more furious as she chased them, and at the last moment, they jumped over the pit, and she fell in. The long scream, followed by a solid thunk, and then a silence. And then a sinister cackle. Her stone skin was uninjured, and she rose out of the pit enraged and looking to end all of the villagers. The villagers gathered up their bows and arrows and began shooting at her from a distance, and none of their arrows had any effect on Spearfinger. She just moved closer and closer in a menacing advance that would ultimately end in the villagers all being devoured. As she approached and their arrows continued to bounce off of her, a chickadee flew down from the sky. Amelia,
can Massachusetts state bird.
I was going to say, can you do a chickadee call?
Chickadee-dee-dee-dee-dee. Chickadee-dee-dee-dee-dee.
I know how much you love to do your bird calls.
And, yeah, I know that one.
But believe it or not, so I'm sharing my screen with Amelia right now, so I don't know if she's reading ahead, but that was literally that's literally the next line in my script. Well, the chickadee, the official state bird of Massachusetts, by the way.
Yes, it is.
Makes a call that sounds like the Cherokee word for heart, and it lands on Spearfinger's spear finger hand. The villagers interpret this as shoot at her heart, which is actually in her hand. I mean, that's what you would have gotten from that, right? And they release more arrow fire directly at Spearfinger's hand. The arrows pierce the stone skin on Spearfinger's hand, and she shrivels to the ground in a completely anticlimactic deflation of her body. And the villagers were saved forever. I don't know if that last part is true. I kind of just threw that in there for effect, but the tale does go that after the villagers shot her in her hand, that she did like that. That was it. Like that's the end of the story. So I just wanted to add that happy little part at the end.
But she still haunts the woods?
No, it's just the tale of Spearfinger. Well, I guess she does still haunt the woods now that you mention it, because in my search for information on this, there's lots of stuff that just says, don't go in the Norton Creek Trail because Spearfinger will get you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And apparently she's it's about dead. 6 miles long.
Oh, that's all?
Yes. But there are other trails that go off of it. But that one is 6 miles.
Well, good for you that you were able to find it.
I'm a Google whiz.
All right. So a few other things about the Norton Creek Trail. First is that the trail has several campsites very close, and you can actually camp along the trail and test the theory that Spearfinger is either there or gone. As I mentioned at the top, there are over 200 cemeteries along the path of the Norton Creek Trail. And if you're a cemetery lover, Amelia, then this would be a great place to check out some beautiful old headstones. But they're difficult to get to because, you know, Spearfinger.
Yeah.
To just kind of give you a quick history of the area, during World War II, this entire area was taken over by the federal government to make the Great Smoky Mountain National Park project. And as part of that project, a dam was built, and that dam resulted in the creation of Fontana Lake. As many people know, lakes that get created behind a dam almost always are created on top of settlements that have lived there for many years. And this one was no exception. Have you ever been out to like the Hoover Dam?
Yes. I got my fingers stuck in a car door there and my voice echoed throughout the dam.
Did you get to go inside?
No.
Oh.
It was a short trip. I smashed my fingers in a car door.
Oh, and the scream for you. Smashing it. Gotcha. So that was it. You just like closed your fingers in the door and people got mad and you guys all left.
No, it's like, I like slammed two of my fingers in the car door and then my dad was still like, we're going to see the dam. And then we walked in. There's a statue of a guy up there with a dog. Yeah.
I think so. Sounds
yeah.
Like.
And then, it's a dam. I mean,
well, so, you know, the big lake behind there, that the name of it is escaping me right now. Like, that was a whole bunch of towns, and they had to evacuate everybody and flood it.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, it happens all over the place. So, when they built Lake Fontana, hundreds of people were displaced from their homes, and their towns were flooded. As part of the agreement with the people who were being forced out, the government was going to build a new road around the lake so people could still visit the family cemeteries they had been using for generations. The construction on the road began, and about 6 miles of road were built before construction was halted due to some environmental concerns. At the end of this 6-mile road, there's another fun attraction near the Norton Creek Trail, the Tunnel to Nowhere. The quarter-mile unlit tunnel bores into the side of the mountain and just ends. Seems to be a fun walk from the parking area at the end of the road down to this tunnel, and then you can walk into the tunnel. In my imagination, by the way, it does not smell like old beer and pee, but it would be a really fun place to bring kids and tell them a scary story to set them straight about whatever your kids need a little bit of scaring about.
Does it smell like beer and pee?
I have no, I've never been there.
Hmm.
I mean, you've been in, you know, like stairways in a parking garage, right?
Oh, yeah. I used to live in Cambridge.
Did you ever go out to the old forts at Bear Cove?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like, yeah.
What did it smell like?
Pot.
When I was old there. Beer and pee, right? So,
oh, goodness.
All right. And the last thing that you may encounter on the Norton Creek Trail is a ghost. Yes, yes. All our stories devolve into a ghost story. But in order for me to tell you this ghost story, I had to tell you the story of Spearfinger. So for this ghost story, right, where it's an unknown time when this is starting, but a settler and his daughter were living in the Norton Creek Trail area many years ago. The daughter was supposedly taken by Spearfinger, her delicate liver devoured, and she returned home. A few days later, she died suddenly, and her father was devastated. He went in search of Spearfinger to exact his revenge. And in his search for Spearfinger, he met an untimely demise of his own. Whether he was also a victim of Spearfinger or died by some other horrible way is unknown. But his spirit is still hanging around the area. Over the years, many lost hikers in the Norton Creek Trail have reported a ghostly light that leads them back out of the forest and back to safety. Some people report it's a haze of light or a mist that beckons them, and others say they have seen a large orb of light, and some say a series of light orbs that lead their way out. But whatever shape a spirit takes, the people associate it with a feeling of peace and security, not of fear or anger. And it's a lovely end to a story about a man who couldn't save his daughter, but is able to save all sorts of other people.
Oh, that's nice.
Aren't the nice ghost stories fun sometimes, too?
Yeah.
They don't all have to be scary and about, you know, moving papers and ghost investigations. Sometimes, you know, this was a helpful guy in life, and he's probably a helpful guy in death.
Those scary paper-moving ghosts.
Yeah. Well, that's right. What happened at the Cohasset Town Hall.
I know.
Okay.
I know.
That was just the one that came to mind most quickly.
What's next, Beth?
So my next story this week is from the Batona Trail in rural New Jersey.
Cool.
Did you know that there are rural areas of New Jersey?
I do. I have friends there.
Oh. I was really surprised by this because whenever I go to New Jersey, I just drive straight through. So as far as I knew, New Jersey is just the turnpike. And it's a nice turnpike.
But I don't know about that.
Well, as far as turnpikes go. But it doesn't...
It's the first time I've ever heard anyone say New Jersey turnpike's nice. It's like, oh my God, I get on the New Jersey turnpike.
Well...
What movie did Paul have me watch the other day?
I don't know. I wasn't there.
Being John Malkovich.
Okay.
And when, after you go through the thing, it spits you out on the New Jersey Turnpike.
Okay.
You remember that movie?
I didn't see it.
Wow, really? I saw it.
Yeah, like the other day.
I feel really cultured now that I saw it and you didn't.
Okay, well, you know, the culture.
Well, it's a fine film. And Cameron Diaz is in it.
Oh, that definitely makes for, you know, Oscar winning.
It was, and I didn't even realize it was her till like halfway through. And Paul's like, yeah, it's Cameron Diaz. I'm like, shut the front door.
Didn't she win the lottery a couple of times out in California?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure she did.
I want to win the lottery.
You know, just like one of those things that like she just like bought a lottery ticket. And I'm not talking like she won $50. Like she won like thousands and thousands of dollars.
I would like to win thousands. I'm manifesting $500,000.
$1 million.
Every day I wake up and I write in my journal, I am manifesting $500,000. Now I have it on record on our show for when I get it.
Okay. Well, and I do want to point out to everyone that Amelia was able to manifest herself within like 8 feet of Stephen King with like a day and a half notice.
I was going to say within like 18 hours.
Yeah, that was amazing.
That's pretty cool.
All right. So anyway, the Batona Trail is a unique name. And where do you think the name Batona comes from?
Native Americans.
Try again.
Italian Americans.
Hey. No, it's actually a mashup for the term back to nature.
What is it?
Batona, back to nature. So the first two letters of each word.
Oh, that's awful. Okay.
So it could be called the Back to Nature Trail, but it's much more fun to say Batona. The Batona Trail runs about 50 miles from end to end, but we're going to focus on the end connected to the area of Pine Barren. And our monster in this story is the New Jersey Devil.
Hey.
Now, I know our motto here on...
Hey, Beth. What do you call a ghost from New Jersey?
What?
About a ghoul.
That was bad.
That was great. All right. What were you saying? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
I know our motto here on ghost hunting in New England is we don't do demons, but we are aware of them and we want to make sure that you know what's out there. And so while I might someday visit Norton Creek Trail, I'm fairly certain that the Batona Trail isn't in my future travel plans. So I'm just going to throw that out there. Like, I know that there are demons out there, but I don't need to go interact with them. I can, however, tell you a story about one. There are a variety of creation stories around the Jersey Devil, but the one that I like the most, and therefore I'm going to share with you, goes like this. On a stormy evening in 1735, Mrs. Leeds of Pine Barren gave birth to her 13th child. When she had found out she was pregnant with this child, she had cursed the child and wished it dead. And as the child emerged from the birth canal with the assistance of a midwife, they saw the infant was deformed. Instead of a newborn child's wail, this creature began making shrieking noises and thrashing. He turned and clawed the midwife so badly she died from the injuries. And then wings sprouted from his shoulder blades, he spat on his mother and flew out the window into the stormy night. The demon then made his presence known on the Batona Trail and around the Pine Barren ever since. He has appeared to mutilate and kill livestock, to hunt children, and to terrorize locals. He's been seen by hundreds, if not thousands, of people over the years. He's described as about 4 feet tall with a kangaroo-style body. He has a goat's head, cloven hooves, dragon wings, horns, and a tail. People hear its screeching cries regularly, and campers in the area say it attacks their tents during the night. Sightings of the Jersey Devil are broken into three time frames. There's pre-1909, January-1909, and post-1909. While early written reports are scarce, there are a few notable sightings. In 1800, a respected naval commodore was test-firing cannonballs in the area, and he saw the Jersey Devil flying nearby. Not sure what it was, but completely convinced it was the embodiment of evil, he fired a cannonball and hit the devil square in the torso, blowing a hole through the creature. Unfazed, the Jersey Devil flew away. Between 1820 and 1850, Joseph Bonaparte, the brother of a man you may have heard about.
Napoleon Bonaparte?
Oh, well done. Well done. Yes. That Napoleon of the French wars of the 1800s. His brother, Joseph, reported seeing the Jersey Devil several times in and around Bordertown, New Jersey, while he was out hunting. In 1899, there were numerous reports in the towns of Vincenttown and Burrsville of chicken and sheep disappearing and unidentified hoofprints being left behind. I'm sure you're curious why there would be an entire sighting time frame of only a month in 1 year when the Jersey Devil has supposedly been around for 285 years. Well, it actually isn't even a whole month. It's only 3 days. From Sunday, January 16th through Wednesday, January 19th, over 100 people in more than 30 different towns reported seeing the Jersey Devil.
Wowie wow.
Right? He left footprints, hoofprints in the snow and backyard and rooftops all over Burlington. A man in Woodbury, New Jersey, reported seeing a flying creature with glowing eyes flying over the street he lived on. The postmaster of Bristol also saw a flying creature with a horse's head and a piercing scream. Professional hunters in Gloucester tracked the creature for 20 miles. People in Camden saw the Jersey Devil and told friends it barked at them before taking off and flying away. A search party was organized at one point, and the dogs in the party refused to follow the trail. Mr. Nelson Evans gave this report on the creature he watched dance in his yard at 2:30 in the morning. It was about 3.5 feet high, with a head like a collie dog and a face like a horse. It had a long neck, wings about 2 feet long, and its back legs were like those of a crane, and it had horse's hooves. It walked on its back legs and held up two short front legs with palso on them. It didn't use the front legs at all while we were watching. My wife and I were scared, I tell you, but I managed to open the window and say, shoo! And it turned around, barked at me, and flew away. Mrs. Sorbinski of Camden heard a commotion in her yard. I opened the door to see the Jersey Devil standing there with my dog in its grip. I hit that devil with a broom until it let go of my dog and flew away. I started screaming until the neighbors came over. Two police officers arrived at my house where over 100 people had gathered. They all heard a scream coming from Kagan Hill. The mob ran toward the creature on the hill, and the police shot it, and the devil flew off into the night. The streets of Camden were empty after that. No one dared go outside after dark, and barely anyone would go out during the day. After causing near riots in January, the Jersey Devil just disappeared. The next reported sightings of him aren't for several years. In 1927, a cab driver was driving alone and got a flat tire. He got out of the car to change the tire, and the Jersey Devil landed screaming on the hood of his car. The cab driver himself screamed and ran, leaving the tire, the jack, and the whole car behind. In 1936, several towns had people coming forward with reports of wild, unnerving screams coming from the woods. No matter how hard the people looked for the source of the screams, no one could find it. During the 1940s, there were multiple sightings of the Jersey Devil by soldiers stationed at Fort Dix. At one point, an all-out manhunt was underway to find the creature. Every soldier on the base was engaged in looking for this creature because it had been seen so frequently. In 1953, Philip Smith, who was known to be a sober and honest man, swore up and down he saw the Jersey Devil walking down the middle of the street. In 1957, now this is wild, the New Jersey Department of Conservation found a burned creature that was mainly a skeleton, but also had feathers attached and some bizarre hind legs. No one was able to conclusively identify the creature as anything. Was the Jersey Devil dead? This wasn't the first time it was believed to be dead. In encounters over the years, people had shot it, or they'd seen the devil fly into power lines and believed it to be finally dead and gone. Except it always comes back.
It's the devil.
Oh, yeah. And 285 years this thing's been...
Yeah, you goofballs.
Terrorizing.
Keep shooting at it. What are you going to do? Come on.
Yeah. So 1961, there's a pair of couples and they park on a well-known lover's lane. And while they're doing their smooching in the car, the Jersey Devil violently lands on the roof of the car and smashed the roof in. Naturally, they screamed and ran away. In 1966, there were again reports of livestock missing and mutilated. There were ducks, geese, cats, and a dog that were all either missing or left ripped apart and dead. And then in 1987, some terrible people, they had chained their aggressive German shepherd outside their house, and when they went out to feed him, they saw his body had been torn apart, and he had been ripped off of the chain and left about 25 feet away from it. So yeah, that's disturbing on so many levels. I didn't find any more recent reports than 1987, but that's not to say that the Jersey Devil has gone away, because as you could tell kind of by the timeline, there would be big gaps between when he would show up. So one of the things that, or one of the theories that people have put forward about him is he's sort of like a harbinger of bad things to come. That, you know, when he shows up, that's followed by just major world events that don't go well. So, you know, he was showing up in the 1930s and the 1940s during World War II, showing up in the 50s, right before the start of the Korean War, in the 60s, right before the Vietnam War. And so it people are thinking, like, maybe it's good that we haven't seen him in 30 plus years, but who knows? He may be appearing any day now.
Yeah, he sounds more like the Mothman when you put it that way. I mean, the Mothman always shows up before terrible events. They both fly. They both have glowing eyes. So who knows?
Does the Mothman look like a kangaroo with a goat head?
No.
Well, does he have horns?
I don't know if anyone's gotten close enough to see if he has horns.
So there are other ideas that perhaps the Jersey Devil is actually some sort of bird, which would explain the screaming. Because I don't know about you, but if I'm somewhere that I'm not sure where I am and I hear a loon start, like, it scares me pretty bad. I'm like, something is dying out there.
Well, that's great. That's a lot of good stuff on the Jersey Devil.
Yeah, I found that really interesting. And it wasn't something that I knew about before either. So I started off with just Googling, you know, haunted hiking, like, and seeing what came up. And these were two stories that came up that I thought were pretty interesting. And there was one other little tidbit that has nothing to do with ghosts, but I thought was very worth mentioning. And it's also on the Batona Trail. It's a place called Ong's Hat. Ong, O-N-G, mm-hmm. which is a fun thing to say in itself. But it's an abandoned town. Its last resident left in 1936. And so supposedly at some point prior to that, there had been a lot of cult involvement, and the government had shown up there to be like, hey, you know, you guys can't be here being a cult like this, so you need to go. And there was a big standoff. And as a result of this standoff, they created this thing called the egg, right? And the thing about the egg is it's used for interdimensional travel. So it's thought that the people who survived the government raid are actually living in an alternate dimension that's very similar to Earth. And they may or may not come back and forth through the egg. But even more interesting than that, in the 1970s, there were a bunch of professors from Princeton University who went out there to investigate this and try to figure out, like, is this actually happening? And I guess they published some papers about, like, they had solved the questions about interdimensional travel. And they have, of course, since been discredited, disproven. They might have been dislifed. But I wasn't able to find a lot more information on who those professors were, but I was like, wow, there's a place called Ong's Hat. And if I go there, I might accidentally end up in an egg and then in a parallel universe. And you know what? I've seen Stranger Things. I watched Dark. I don't need to go to any parallel universe.
Nah.
Have you seen Dark?
No, never even heard of it.
Oh, it's German, but it's dubbed in English, and it's really good. It's about time travel, and, like, it's fun. I enjoyed it a lot.
Well, that sounds great.
Yeah. So those are my stories for this week. And do we have any mail? Any reviews?
We have all kinds of stuff.
Do we have any drive-by ghostings yet?
We got tons of stuff going on.
Okay. So,
but first, Beth, how about some transition music from our friends, Kings of the Boulevard? Kings of the Boulevard out of Hull, Massachusetts, a great rockabilly band. Yes, that's right. That's Kings of the Boulevard out of Hull, Massachusetts. My dad's playing the bass.
He does a great job.
He does do a great job.
Are they doing any shows soon that he might like us to mention? No. Okay.
It's COVID.
I know, but he does outdoor shows.
No.
Like he does those little sidewalk gatherings on Saturday morning. I mean, yeah, it's worth going and seeing. You know, you can sit there and drink your coffee and some, you know, nice live music and there are so few things that we can go out and do these days, so.
Okay, our first drive-by ghosting comes from Joe Galinas.
Hello, Joe Galinas.
Yes, and he has also sent us another, we heard from him before, with his drive-by ghosting about seeing the Native American.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
Yeah, on the horse, and he sent me a shirtless picture on Facebook. So thank you so much. This shirtless picture was a shirtless statue. That was pretty funny.
That's fabulous. What statue was it?
I gotta look it up. But it was very, very funny. And thank you so much. I got a good laugh out of that.
Great.
Okay. Dear Ghost Hunters, thanks for reading my story, and since you asked, I'll tell you about the house I grew up in. The homestead, as my family called it, was built in 1870 and has been in my family its entire life. Mine was the sixth generation to live in the house. The ghost that resides there was a great aunt named Nellie. I'm not sure when she lived, but the stories I heard were mostly about how she had been a practical joker or trickster, and that she didn't like other women. They used to keep a bucket of water in the kitchen to put out the cooking fire after dinner. Apparently, Nellie thought it'd be funny to fill the bucket with kerosene. Oh, goodness.
Yikes.
Nearly burning the house down to get a laugh. Growing up, there was an old trunk filled with her possessions that stayed in the back of a long closet. We were warned to stay out of Nellie's trunk to avoid her wrath. A friend of mine growing up ignored the warnings and went into the trunk. My father had followed the muffled screams to the closet where he found him stuck in the trunk. The lid had closed on him and he couldn't get out. On one occasion, my stepmother had gone into the closet with the trunk and the closet door somehow locked her in. My father said she screamed for 30 minutes before the door finally let her out. And even though he was in the house, my dad didn't hear a thing. I heard a laugh once outside, and I had a fort in the yard not too far from the house. I was about to walk in when I heard her. I ran back to the house, gathered my nerves, and went back to tell her to go away, which was how you got, yes, which was how you got her to leave you alone. When I was in my teens, my dad had moved the trunk to the hallway at the top of the stairs. After all those years telling us kids not to mess with Nellie's trunk, I couldn't understand why he moved it into the open, but there it was. So being a teenager, I had the courage to look through her things a few times. Nothing bad happened until it did. I came out of the bathroom early in the morning before the sun came up. The hair was already standing up on the back of my neck before I looked up the stairs like I already knew she was there. And as I looked up the stairs, there was a white mist in the shape of a person at the top. It didn't look long enough to know if she was coming down. I moved across the living room where I could see the bottom of the staircase, but not the top, and just sat there until the sun was up. Thanks for listening. Joe.
Good story.
That was amazing. Thank you.
Good story. That was great. Okay, on to mail. The title of this email is You Inspire Us.
Ooh, we are inspirational.
Inspirational. Hi, my name is Molly. I'm 8
and I have a big sister, Bridget, who is 11. You guys inspired us to make our own podcast called Legends, Folklore, and History of New England, a podcast for kids by kids. Our first episode dropped today, September 24th. We love your podcast and can't wait for more episodes. Love, Molly and Bridget.
Molly and Bridget are so cute, and I absolutely went and listened to their podcast. It's short. I think it was under 10 minutes, and it talked about a couple of different things, and it was just phenomenal. They tell some jokes. They give you a good little story to listen to, and so I would highly recommend that any of our listeners who have 10 minutes go and check out Molly and Bridget's podcast, Legends, Folklore, and History of New England.
Yeah, way to go, girls. Good job. Okay, now over to, we don't have any reviews, but we had a comment. And it is from, it's an old comment. It took me a minute to find it. It's on Podbean. It's from Fizzy. It's 4 months old. And it's on our episode, Gin in January, which I did with Will Fox. Great episode. Yes, Jesus is a prophet in Islam, as is our belief of Adam, Noah, Moses, and other prophets. Yes, belief is jinn can shapeshift into different creatures and animals. Thanks. Well, thank you so much, Fizzy, for answering those questions I had on that episode. I really appreciate it. Because at one point I said to Will, I was like, you know, I'm not an expert Muslim, but I'm pretty sure Jesus is mentioned in the Quran as a prophet. Mm-hmm. So now we know.
He's also considered a prophet in Judaism.
Yes.
The only difference between Christianity is in Christianity, it's believed that he is actually the Messiah.
That is true.
So that's the Islam, Judaism, and Christianity all share a basis of foundation. Their big difference is Islam believes that Muhammad is the Messiah, and Judaism believes that the Messiah has not yet come.
That is accurate.
Yes.
Okay. So, did we have anything else tonight, Beth?
I would like to eat a pie.
I could make you a pie.
Yeah, we talked about this before, yet I have no pie.
When did we talk about this?
I'm pretty sure last week, but I did see some Instagram hate baking.
I wouldn't call it hate baking. I was grouchy, and so I made a pie on my Instagram story, and it was like 40 clicks long, and I didn't think anyone was going to watch it, and I got so mad. I had I got probably 30 people sending me messages about my Instagram pie.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't send you a message about it, but I watched all the steps.
Yeah. And I was at Whole Foods the other day, and Hubbard Squatch was on sale.
Blue Hubbard squash?
Blue Hubbard squash.
Well, I'll be expecting.
You told me you wanted me to make you?
I'll be expecting a pie tomorrow.
I don't know about tomorrow, but maybe early next week.
Okay. I'll take it. Okay. So make sure that you send us your messages. You can find us at ghosthuntinginnewengland.com. We are at ghosthuntinginnewengland@gmail.com. We are on Instagram. We are on Twitter. Ghost Hunting NE. We are on Facebook. We have a whole bunch of different places where you can get our podcast. And
please leave us a review. 5 stars, 5 stars, 5 stars. And guess what, Beth? Remember that time that you were like, oh, I want to talk about the Instagram? And I was like, no, it's not that impressive. Don't bring it up. And you're like, I'm going to tell everyone we got 600 followers. Well, guess what, Beth?
What?
We have a post on Instagram with almost 2,000 likes.
So,
why?
Yeah,
I don't know.
If you haven't seen it yet, like, go and like it. Like, it's
we're viral.
Join the party.
We're viral. I mean, we most of our posts get like, you know, 60, 70, 80 likes. And then this one post that was posted on September 18th has 1,949 likes.
Ooh, there's 14 more since I checked before we started.
It's going crazy.
Yeah. People are crazy about that little picture. So yeah, check out. We have more than 600 followers now too. But I gotta say, like, I was really impressed by 600 followers, and I'm even more impressed by how many followers we have now.
1,337.
Ooh, we went up 4 since I last checked. Ooh. See, the people are coming to us. It's October. It's spooky season.
It is spooky season. It is spooky season.
All right. So Amelia gets to be in charge of all the social media. Also, I did. Based on Tim's advice, I did make an appointment to see the doctor.
What'd they say?
They said you can come in on Tuesday.
Oh, great. So Beth will have an update on that next week.
Yes, and hopefully all my hair will still be attached to my head.
God willing.
I know, I'm very upset about that.
I think that's it, Beth. I think that's all we got for this week. What do we got next week? Ooh, we got a good episode next week. Next week is, well, we're not going to announce it because whenever I announce stuff on the show, we don't do it. So,
oh, okay. So then, yeah, by all means, join us next week where we may or may not do something.
Yeah, who knows?
But chances are we're going to talk.
We'll
be here.
Because
if we just sit here and look at each other, it's a really boring podcast.
Boo, boo, boo. And as always,
happy hunting.
Beth, I know we're done recording, but I have something I need to say.
I gathered that by the very exuberant.
I even put it on my show note sticky that I keep on my computer, and I forgot to say it.
Maybe if you were looking at that instead of your Instagram followers or
non-followers.
No, maybe. Oh, good point, Beth.
Okay. Beth, do you know what next Wednesday is? The day this show comes out. Do you know what day that is?
October 7th.
Yes. Do you know what else comes out on October 7th? Not just the show, but what else? The movie Hubie Halloween I started in with Adam Sandler.
Stop it.
Yes.
So you mean people could have listened to this podcast and then stopped and gone directly to Netflix and checked for Amelia in Hubie Halloween with Adam Sandler?
Hubie Halloween. So if there's a scene, and I don't really know, there's a scene in the movie where Adam Sandler's in it and Michael Chiklis is in it and Ray Liotta's in it, and I'm standing right behind Ray Liotta pretending to cry. And if they cut that scene out, I'll be really sad, but don't worry because I have my paycheck from that day because it was so much fun. I have it framed and in in our fun room in our apartment.
That's amazing. Congratulations. Remember how when you did that, we were, you know, like it was before anybody knew about Corona or anything, and we were going to have like a big watch party?
Yes. We are no longer doing that.
Oh, come on. Let's do that. Can I
do it on Zoom?
Watch it? Well, I mean, we could do it that way. It could be a virtual watch party where we all just tune in and watch at the same time.
We'll see. Okay. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay.
Thank you, everyone. Have a good evening.